You're listening to Don't At Me with Justin Simeon, and I'm sitting in front of
two amazing women. Dymonique Davis, I'm going to go first.
Yay!
I've known you for a long period of time.
Yes,
18 years.
18 years, so long that you're using the full name and not the condensed.
Yes, Dymonique. We met each other in high school, and I am so excited to see you blossoming as a filmmaker. Mm. The most recent thing I saw of yours is a short at LACMA. Mm-hmm. And that's wild, right? That's Wild Wild West?
Wild Wild West, yeah.
Yeah, and I thought that was just so amazing. And I saw Sugar, which was your AFI film last year.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Starring Elle Lorraine, who is also a friend of ours from high school.
Yes,
so welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Yes, and you're like, listen, everyone asks me, like, who's next? These two ladies are next, just FYI. So Tiffany Johnson, as some might say. I met you through Lena Waithe, as I've met a lot of black people, right? That's
right,
what we met, right?
Well, yeah, because she knows.
She's the black people connector.
It's like the 6 degrees of Lena Waithe.
You meet Lena, you're like, oh, I've met everyone in Black Hollywood.
Absolutely.
Got it. And was so impressed by you, like, you carry yourself with a sense of fashion and style and purpose and swag that is immediately impressive, but you also back it up with, like, a really kind of breathtaking cinematic language and knowledge.
Wow.
I mean, you both do, because I feel Dime over here. Like, he didn't say that.
Yeah,
because
I heard it, and I was a little,
you know what it is? Because we grew up partly together, so... Mm-hmm. It wasn't a discovery that you know all of these things.
And Justin's good.
He knows how to back his shit up.
Justin's good.
No, I'm just being honest. Like, the reason
he had to learn mine.
Yeah, yours was like, oh. It was like,
okay.
You know, and you've also are sort of beginning your ascent with some really special short films. Marabou is the latest, which I just think is just killer.
Oh, thank you.
Starring Latrice Royale. This coming out of your time at the AFI program. Mm-hmm. And then you also had a film at Cannes. Called Ladylike, which stars among people Nia Gervais, who's in Dear White People, is Kelsey. Who else is in Ladylike?
Courtney Saul, the
Ms.
lovely Brooks.
No one else but Brooke.
Right.
So we have all the black women.
Yeah, we got them.
I just want to talk to you guys because you are what everyone says that they're looking for but can't seem to find. Black female directors.
We're here.
So everyone's looking and scouring the earth for you.
Mm-hmm.
How is that going on your end?
I mean, they could look a little harder.
Oh, they haven't found. Okay,
I mean,
interesting.
We're
well, here they
we
are.
We are here. Literally right here, available,
ready.
Willing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know what that's about. I think it feels so in the now. It's so now, you know, like female directors are just female-driven projects, yet there's still that, like, why wasn't Ocean's 8 directed by a female? Like,
right.
Why? You know what I mean? Like, it's still like, well, we're here and you guys want to be, you want to make the change.
You
and
say
and be
that
a,
you want.
Yeah.
Optimistically, I think it's just slow. Like, progress is always slow. I think that we're in it. We're in the midst of it. I think it's coming. It's happening now. It's just churning.
It's turning slower than our imaginations
absolutely
might have it. I mean, I think, you know, I feel a kinship with you guys because we're filmmakers.
Yeah.
You know, I was talking to the brilliant Marquis Richardson and Calais Stewart about, like, their sort of journeys as artists and actors and performers, which, you know, you and I, Dime, have dipped our toe into. Tiff, I feel like you're a natural-born performer. But we were called to a slightly different part of it, that there isn't really as big a tradition of black people in. What made you think that what gave you the audacity to be a filmmaker?
Wow, that is a great question.
That's a beautiful question, too.
Well, I would love some beautiful answers.
Well, I don't think there's nothing else for me.
Wow. And when did you know that?
I think I knew it early, for sure, in high school, but I was afraid to allow that to be my reality, allow that to be my truth.
Why afraid?
I hadn't seen that before.
Dang. Isn't that something?
Mm-hmm.
It comes down to what you see.
Literally.
Tiff, what about you? When did it?
For starters, there's nothing that terrifies or excites me more than directing, like that, which is why I know it's my calling. But I dabbled in front of the camera, and it wasn't until early on, you know, middle school, high school, but it wasn't until I'm a shout out the Girl Scouts of America.
Yeah, that's a Girl Scout.
That's true.
Because I took
Black Girl
the
Scouts,
camp.
Compton,
yeah.
Troop Compton, which Tiffany and I do.
Yes, Troop Compton.
Tiffany,
based on it, it's fine.
We can develop it. I mean,
it's
our Troop Compton. My mother
here's
was
the
my Girl
deal.
Scout leader.
Mm-hmm.
It would be brilliant. Yeah.
What do you mean would be? Is there a one sheet? Like, let's get this going. Oh, my God.
I mean, we should do it. But no, I took this camp called Let's Make a Movie, and it was like 8th grade summer, and it was the first time I was exposed to what it actually takes to make a movie. I didn't even know. I mean, we all know the actors because that's all you see. But for me, it was like something lit in that moment. And we had to write, direct, star, edit all of our, you know, this movie over the summer. And I was like, wait a minute, this is it. But I will say this. I went to film school. And while I feel like I learned sort of how to direct, sort of the technical aspects of directing and what the role of a director is, it wasn't until I got out that I found my voice. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a difference. Mm-hmm. I think that's what makes you a filmmaker.
And I want to talk about that.
Yeah.
Not to cut you off, but just I want to get into as much as we can with the time we have. I have a distinction between, say, visual storytelling and cinema. And they're not, this is not shade to visual story. That's not what this is about.
Yeah,
I just know that I have a calling towards cinema, and I feel like some people have a calling towards visual storytelling.
Yeah.
What makes it different for you, the two ideas of, say, a craftsman and an artist? That sounded like shade, but you know what I mean.
No, I think it's when you can see, and you're, you know, so good, great at this, is when you see the choices that the director, that the filmmaker is making, and, like, everything is so motivated, and it's almost like everyone, if you gave everyone the same script, you would see, everyone would tell it differently, but a cinematic director, you will see the story way differently than I think anyone else. So for me, I see the choices, and I'm like, wow, that's...
Yeah, I think, listen, things can look dope as fuck, for sure.
Yeah.
But
and they oftentimes do.
They do. Right now, shit is looking amazing.
Yeah. They also sometimes do not.
That is very true as well. And we are tricked sometimes by thinking shit looks dope as fuck when it actually does not.
Are we?
But
or
some people are. Well, just, but for me, I think the difference is when those choices, like Tiffany said, are used to tell the story. Visual style is visual.
Yeah.
Cinema is visual with a purpose.
Yeah.
And for me, like, that's the difference and always the thing that I'm trying to sharpen. And I think that's another thing. I think that a lot of filmmakers don't always realize that we're always sharpening ourselves.
Yes.
And always becoming better.
Well, I mean, to me, it wouldn't be fun. You know, you were just talking about choices. And I remember Diamond and I went to the same performing arts high school in Houston. My first class, theater class, was Intro to Theater, taught by Susie Phillips.
Who's a fucking
genius.
Oh, my God. And the most amazing fucking woman I know.
Amazing. And she, the first thing she did in that class, and you would think it has nothing to do with anything, but it was the beginning of my understanding of myself as an artist. She played Raisin in the Sun and the Sidney Poitier movie and would stop the film every few minutes and ask the kids, us, the class, like, why do you think they did that? Why do you think this is the shot? Why is it a close-up of his black face surrounded by this white pillow? Why is this now a wide shot? And she just was trying to get us to see choices. That choices were being made.
Yeah. Oh, and it wasn't amazing. It was not a class. It was not a one time
thing. Oh yeah, this
we
was
spent
a
an entire semester on this one movie.
Yes, yeah.
Analyzing. And that was our foundation.
That was how we began to understand theater.
It was, you know what I never thought about? Us being black students at that school. And what that impact had
on us. What was really powerful about Susie is she certainly recognized that the black kids were having a different experience than the white kids, or the kids of color, I would say. And she acknowledged that in a way that, like, it was never really modeled for me before Susie, like, what like white ally would look like or how they would talk about these things. And she never made white people feel weird about it, but she made it clear that, like, yeah, the black kids are having a different experience, everyone, and it's fine. And, you know, they need different things. What she taught us was we fell in love with the idea that everything has choices.
Yes.
And if we don't like something, even if we have a visceral reaction to not liking something, we better know why we don't like it.
Exactly.
And we better know for sure that the emotions that we're feeling are not on purpose. Because I remember she would take us to also see, like, Brechtian plays. And Brechtian is a style where, you know, the play is just very honest about the fact that you're watching a play. It sort of makes fun of the concept of a fictional story, but it also is a story that engrosses you and tells the truth. And I remember kids didn't really like it or get that, but she was like, yeah, but he wants you to feel some of these things on purpose. So don't reject it just because you feel something. It's art's job to make us feel something. It's just the artist does it on purpose.
Yeah.
And listen, you know, you guys are in a beautiful place because you're at the beginning. You're at the nexus of what your career is going to be.
that also means that, you know, the films that you're working on don't always have the time that you want to have. They don't always have the funds. They don't always have the support of the entertainment industrial complex.
Yeah.
But still, you guys are trying to find a way to make choices.
Yeah. It's also tough, like, I've been...
Well, you're given few. Sorry, go ahead.
Lately, I've been stepping into kind of like the commercial world a little bit, mm-hmm. which is so different and challenges me because I am a person who I love time. Mm-hmm. I love time to like and space to like figure out what I'm saying and how I'm going to say it. And you just aren't really allowed that. Yeah. Also, you don't have fucking control, which is very difficult. But even in that, I found a way to kind of hold on to my intent.
Mm.
For me, that's where I start. Like, mm-hmm. what, and that's writing. I start with what is my intent? What am I trying to say? What is my point of view? And I build from there through character. And then filmmaking, the same thing is like, what is the intent and the choices? Sometimes, and I will be honest, sometimes it's like, that would be a dope ass shot.
Mm-hmm, right.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I gotta kind of do that.
Mm-hmm,
right.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But a lot of times it's like, how does this propel the character? How does this give the audience a peek into the character's mm-hmm. feelings? Or do I want the audience to be the character right mm-hmm. now? You know? So mm-hmm. for me, I really start from the inside out.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to do that across the board. It's getting harder in these other
spaces.
Yeah. Which I don't like. And I'm trying to find a way to make that world work for me.
Well, you know what I think some of it is? Sometimes you're just there to learn.
Mm.
Sometimes you're not there to... Mm. You know, author something. Sometimes you are just there to learn something. And I there are lots of scripts I tried to get made, you know, since Dear White People that just never got off the ground. And sometimes those scripts were like, I can really say something with this. And sometimes it's like, you know what? This might be an exercise, but I need to, there's something here that I really, really want to learn.
I agree. You know what sucks though? As a writer,
mm-hmm.
I can write anytime I want.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I can kind of explore that.
Yeah.
When I get an opportunity to direct, there's so much pressure on mm-hmm. this has to be great so that I can get something else. So I don't have as much freedom, I feel like, to explore. And I'm putting this extra pressure on myself, and it's difficult. Go for it.
Well, no, just you saying this has to be great, I think, segueing into female filmmakers, we feel we have to be great
mm-hmm.
because the opportunities are not there. So it's like... We don't have the space to fail, it feels like.
Yeah.
Because if it's not great when we first come out, then it's like, oh, well, that was your shot. You know, that was your one opportunity or whatever. Just it feels like we put this pressure. Mm-hmm. Like, but I think also for us personally, we put that pressure because we're artists and we're like sensitive about our shit.
Yes, you
but,
are.
Yes. But
well,
I think there is.
And I want to talk about this pressure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I want to hear first before, because I don't want to lose this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What is your process, Tiff? Because the other thing that I want people to hear from the mouths of these, you know, coveted black female directors that they're all looking for is, you know, I just want people to hear this part. So talk to me about it.
Well, it's interesting. Dime works sort of in out. Mm-hmm. I actually start with the world. Mm-hmm. I always like, for me, I'm gravitated towards very masculine directors and sort of these masculine worlds, you know, gangster films or noir or whatever. So I'm those sort of speak to me aesthetically, but I want to fill those worlds with females and sort of bring a female perspective. So I'm always like, what can I make them do that hasn't been done before? And like with Ladylike, it was really, I was like, I want to see dope, stylish, vicious, ruthless girls, but painted in this world that's very colorful and feminine and smooth, and but giving them sort of this is always the subtext of something is darker and deeper there, and even, you know, Hitchcock, obviously, which is everyone's go-to, but you know, there's this great line he has, always make the audience suffer as much as possible, and I like I keep that shit back of my head. I'm just like, I want to paint this very colorful, vivid world, but it's going to make you suffer. And so, that's how I always approach it.
I think that's awesome. And the reason I wanted to hear you articulate that is it's so easy to lump
people together. Yeah. You are two black female directors yeah. at a similar moment in your careers. Yeah. And the thing that everyone wants to do is just put you all in the Dee Reese category or put you all in the whatever, whoever they have in their mind as whatever a black female director is. But the truth is, like, just like white male directors, you guys have different approaches. And I think that, like, you know, I grew up worshiping Kubrick and comparing myself to him. But at a certain point, I had to go, okay, but just because he did it this way, that doesn't mean that's the only way. Like, part of being an artist is finding the freedom to make intentional choices, but also to just follow those instincts, you know? Because sometimes those instincts take you in places that someone might say, that's not artful.
Yeah.
But you're finding your instincts, though. That's what that
is,
leads
but
you...
But what is artful versus not artful?
For instance, like, you know, if I were to say I have a passion for, I'm just pulling this out of my behind, but I have a passion for car race scenes. And the reason I have a passion for them...
you are pulling that out of your behind because that is not true.
How dare you? Well, I'm just saying, like, you know, and like, oh, well, you know, that's not what so-and-so is into, so maybe it's not artful. But maybe there's something there that is calling me because maybe I'm innovating a way to capture motion in film that's different. That you know what I'm saying? I want people to hear from actual black female directors what turns them on and what gets them going, because I just want people to be aware of just how diverse and interesting these stories are and these storytellers.
For sure. That's one of my favorite things about my relationship with Tiff is how much we love cinema and we love this art form and we love our craft, but we approach it so differently and we tell, like, I can see when I look at something you've done, I know that you've done it. And it's so different than any choices I would have made. But it's like, it's my favorite fucking thing because we are so much alike but so different. And we can get a piece of material and put ourselves on it in different ways. And it resonates with a multitude of people. I think that's like my favorite thing.
I call Dime the Coppola to my Scorsese.
Yes!
I think because they're both, I mean, you... A Goodfellas, if Coppola would have did Goodfellas, it would have been totally different than how Scorsese would have did Goodfellas.
Yep.
But yet they're both giants and they're both like...
And they talk to each other.
And they talk to each other. And they can exist at the same time.
Which we're not afraid of.
No.
It took a second. And I think we're still trying to figure out how to ride this particular bicycle. But I do think it took a second for us, the burgeoning community of black filmmakers... to learn how to talk to and with each other because we're not each other's enemies. Like, we're actually each other's support system in the same way that Spielberg and De Palma and Scorsese and Coppola and that crew.
Lucas, they all were there
and that
for
was
each
great.
Other.
And I think
they really, in the minds of the average moviegoer, were in the same space. But they found a way to have communion and have community and feed into each other, not just compete with each other.
And support and like be honest and be, you know, create that space of like a safe space of giving feedback and speaking to my work in a way that's constructive for me and knowing what my, like, Dime would give me a note knowing what I'm trying to do, and it's speaking to that. You know, it's not a note that she would do. It's like, okay, I see what you're doing. This is where I think, you know what I mean? And that's so important because I'm...
Because the art of giving a note, honey, is an art.
Yeah.
Oh, really my God.
It really is.
And Dime's great at giving notes.
Wait, I also want to say something similar about those guys and what's happening with us is they were renegades. And I think we're in that same space, which is... It's great to kind of, like, be aware of that and know, but I think... Not all of us are aware of that, and I think we can do what they did only if we are.
If we sort of put away that sort of mental barrel and say, you know what, let's screen for each other. Let's screen our rough cuts for each other. Let's have let's be vulnerable enough to show the first or second draft to each other,
which is hard.
You know, one of the things that I'll just say that was so helpful for me is that, like, you know, I asked you guys to join me in Palm Springs a year ago to help workshop a script that I'm, you know, lucky enough to be able to shoot this summer called Bad Hair. But, like, you guys plug. But you guys, like, but the reason I'm saying this because, you know, I've been a part of marginalized communities, black and gay, but I'm not a part, I have male privilege. And I because of my experience, I have enough wherewithal to go, if I'm going to tell a female-centric story, I better bring some females into this, into this story circle. And I got so much really, really wonderful feedback from you guys in particular, because you both are at this
nexus of black femaleness, but also cinema.
We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to get into the films and the TV shows that are turning Dime and Tiff on, and also why we are terrified to publicly criticize black films. This is Don't At Me with Justin Simeon.
Thank you for listening to this KCRW podcast. In case you don't know us, KCRW is public radio in Los Angeles, bringing the best of NPR to Southern California. We're also known for our own brand of bold and innovative programming, evocative storytelling, taste-making music, and audio documentaries that are little movies for your ears. You can join our community to support this show and others, or make a one-time donation just to say thank you. Find out more at kcrw.com/join.
Now we're back with Dime Davis and Tiffany Johnson.
Tell me who's, like, getting you going. Like, who have y'all been talking about, like, you know, in terms of, like, movies or something you've just seen? Or, like, what have you been chewing on?
Oh, that's so interesting.
Recently, like, what's inspiring to you?
Okay, a couple things.
Oh, yes.
Well, obviously, I'm sure everybody's saying this, Atlanta. Mm-hmm. Which you're not all the way here for, right?
No, I love Atlanta.
Oh, okay. Which, I know, I think it's great. Because some people aren't.
Yeah,
no,
you know, my thing about Atlanta is that it's like, it is like jazz in that, like, you know, there's some pieces that are just explosive and there's some pieces that are like, you know, kind of slow and sort of want you to feel a looming sense of dread or something.
Yeah.
But I am very here for it, and I'm very here because I believe that artists shouldn't always have to entertain me, you know, into oblivion. And what I love about Atlanta is that it knows when to be entertaining and it knows when to be intellectual and it knows. And I think Donald and Hero and that whole team, there's such a singular thing coming out of that show that, like, I'm going to watch it by its rules.
Yes.
Yes.
You have to.
Which I'm learning to do in general.
Yeah. It's a show that doesn't ask you to like it.
Yes.
And it almost doesn't care.
It doesn't care.
You know what I mean? It's, and that, the audacity in that, I think, is powerful. It's like, I'm going to give you something different every time, and you're just going to have to figure it out.
The audacity in that, a show about black men and a woman, because I think she's a very important character.
She's one of my favorite characters.
She is. Yeah. I love her. The actress.
Oh, my gosh. She's
amazing.
Phenomenal.
She's incredible.
Holy shit.
No shade to anybody, but Deadpool 2...
Oh, she's the best
for
thing.
For me, it was all about.
She's the best thing about it.
It was all about Zazie. Yeah. Anyways.
It's okay. Dime didn't see it.
Dime hasn't seen it, guys. She hasn't seen the film. She
also, I love that Dime doesn't. She's not a big commercial movie person. I love, like, I love a summer blockbuster. Dime is, like, too cool
y'all
for school.
Don't
I went to see fucking Ocean's 8 because I love Ocean's 11 and 12 and 13.
And what'd you think on this microphone?
I enjoyed it. It was fun.
Wow. Okay, so...
Fun is the worst word you could use.
No, the worst word!
I had a lot of fun, guys. Okay. I took myself to the movies. Good. It was good.
So the evening was good.
I was, like, really impressed with Rihanna's performance.
Can I say something? This is the shadiest review. Can I say, we are terrified of saying how we really feel. I haven't seen it. This is a real thing, though, y'all. Like, aren't you terrified of, like, giving your honest opinion about black stuff?
Absolutely.
Publicly.
Yes.
Yeah.
Black stuff.
Yes.
Because we know it's political.
Yeah.
We know that if we trash something that we saw, that goes out, that echoes into the world, and it signals things that we don't want it to signal. Mm-hmm. But it's a weird kind of, like, inverted oppression in that we can't be honest.
Right.
And we can't, like, push each other to our best.
Inverted?
It's from inside.
Yeah.
Because we want to, I want to promote and be political and sort of get everybody in this room.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, if the doors are closed and the mics are off, like, I'll also say some things that I think are important because I want to be better and I want someone to tell me when I didn't see something or when I missed something. I want it's hard, it sucks, it burns, but I have to be open to feedback and criticism.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're shady bitches also.
Yeah,
so we tend to...
I did enjoy Ocean's 8.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
No, I really did. Okay. There were, I'll tell you, a little lack of stakes for me.
Okay. Okay.
That was
my yeah, fair. And that's actually the best thing about Ocean's 11, I think.
Because the motherfucking stakes. I mean, or anything you watch.
I'll be honest. Yes, yes. Here, I live for Soderbergh. The Ocean's movies have never captured my attention. I've seen them. I didn't see Ocean's 8. I worship at the altar of Soderbergh, but they didn't do anything for me. So
really?
I'll be honest.
He also didn't direct this
that.
One. But,
no, I he mean, didn't do this one. But the world he created, as enamored as I am of the craft, it just never captured my imagination. But every story ain't supposed to do that for everybody.
It's true.
You know? So,
and it shouldn't, yeah, honestly.
I think
we're
the
so
best
versatile.
Ones don't, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, what do you think about that? Mm-hmm. Like, just our, in a, even, you know, sometimes it almost like, I don't even know how I feel about it sometimes when a okay black movie comes out and it, you know, it does like, it has a box office that justifies its being made.
Like, give us an example.
Sometimes it's, sometimes it's like, you know, well, okay.
For the last shady ass move.
Because I almost did it.
Yeah.
I almost like.
I want you to.
No, but okay, I'm going to say this much. Let me get it out. Let me get the sentence okay. out. Then let me think about what I'm not afraid to talk about. But like, when a movie comes out and it does well and you feel the white critics were.
Oh my God, yeah.
They're either Ooh, being speak, kind.
Speak on yeah. it.
They're either being kind or they genuinely were sort of. Because there's an exoticism to black stuff uh-huh. for white people that, weirdly enough, makes me feel worse. Like, because yeah, it's like they didn't even see what was there because they were caught up in this like black thing. Mm-hmm. And like, and when I see a movie that I'm like, okay, that movie was a six. Like, it was fine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was fine. It was fun. I had moments I enjoyed. Yay, black people. Like, that's my experience of the film. And then I read these like raves from white critics. It's weird. It makes me yeah. feel uncomfortable. But I'm never going to say that publicly because mm-hmm. I want the movie to do well. And mm-hmm. I want these actors and this director and these producers, I want all of them to keep working because it benefits me. And it, every story in for everybody, all these things, but there is a space where I do want to dissect it because I want to make great work, and I think mm-hmm. anybody who is real about being in this business wants to always refine their craft.
So yeah. Do we do that amongst each other?
I feel like we have to now because yeah. I do think there are political stakes. And this is what I want people to hear. It's like there are things that we, even in a Don't At Me environment, probably won't say because yeah. there are political, it's not political correctness. There's a political reality to mm-hmm. the fact that like we are more disenfranchised. And if mm-hmm. we get into this crabs in a barrel situation, like we may not even be trying to get into it, but these things come off like parting shots mm-hmm. when you openly, you know, criticize another team of black
they
folks.
Do.
Because our time here is so tenuous. Mm-hmm. Our relationship to this industry is so tenuous.
And you personally experienced that with the first season of Dear White People.
Yeah. You mean like people sort of like mm-hmm. like important? You mean
one
like
person,
Spike?
Yeah.
Yeah, like Spike sort of like, you know, shaded me in like, Hollywood Reporter.
It was ridiculous.
Yeah, it was. He went in. No, you know, reason. He went in. And
but what I will say about that, though, that, and maybe it's because I know you, mm-hmm. but that specifically felt like his own shit. Like his shit, his own fear spilling out onto the page.
Yeah, and it was awkward for me because I mean, I worship Spike
of course.
Lee.
Mm-hmm.
And we, you know, have spent time together and all this stuff. And we've chatted a few times after that. And I don't know that he even processes it as a parting shot. I don't know that that's
oh,
how
that's
he thinks of it. But, yeah, it hurt my feelings.
For
and
sure.
it was... I think part of it was just feeling like I feel so low on the Hollywood totem pole.
Yeah.
Like I'm having to fight tooth and nail to keep mm-hmm. my show on the air or to get another movie made. Mm-hmm. And those kinds of shots can ruin that opportunity for me. Mm-hmm. Or at least that's what I feel. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know that that may not even be true because, mm-hmm. you know, that article came out. I didn't make a big deal out of it. Nobody wrote other articles. It really wasn't a big deal. Also, mm-hmm. I don't know. I think it's part of being in the ring. You know, you gotta sort of be able to take those slings and arrows. I also, at the same time, if that's how he really feels about me and about my work, I'm not mad that he said it. If that's what he really feels,
honest.
You know what I'm saying? Like mm-hmm. I can take somebody not feeling me artistically. Mm-hmm. I can, mm-hmm. and I can agree to disagree, or I can even go in and look at what it is I'm doing. Specifically, I think he took issue with the homages, you know,
right.
and the sort of like openly ways in which that first season in the movie acknowledges, you know. Its roots.
But
like,
that,
I couldn't
those were your choices
door.
For this piece, though.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
in season two, we see it all over again. Mm-hmm. We don't see him, mm-hmm. but we see other filmmakers, which
yeah.
is what Tiff and I talk about a lot. with specifically with Dear White People, and I have not seen another television in general, but another comedy take the risk that
no
you've taken and tell the story the way that you have.
Mm-hmm. Dear White People is many things to me, but it's also just it's a way to put black faces in typically white occupied
genres,
genres, but also just scenes. Just you know, you don't really normally see a comedic black noir caper. Like, that's not a thing that you can see, but I get to do it for a half hour in my show because we've set it up as a place that Winchester is a pastiche of cinematic references. Mm-hmm. And so it isn't weird if the show veers into, you know, two people in a room talking, or if it veers into noir comedy because, you know, that's the world I created because that's the playground I want to be in. Mm-hmm. But, like, you know, I consider myself to be at a learning stage right now. Mm-hmm. And I am openly studying and taking on some of the masters because I want to learn it. How do you guys, like, what is your focus on sharpening your craft? Because we're not coming up in a studio system. We're not coming up with people who know this space. We're kind of figuring some things out ourselves. We have our community. But, like, how are you learning? How are you sort of giving yourself the opportunities or not? Or do you feel like you don't have them? Just curious.
To learn,
to get better, to practice.
I think there's always an opportunity to learn. I think so a few things, obviously, like consuming content and the content of people that you want to, like, be studying.
Totally.
But also, like, Tiff is like this too. Like, I'll get a book, a good book, though. Bruce Block.
Yeah,
that's incredible.
Yes, absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Bruce Block, yes.
And I'll literally take myself back to school. And another thing we've been doing is, like, we'll get together, watch some shit, and we'll talk about it.
My invitation for sure was lost in the mail. Y'all been getting together?
I mean, I had two things. Going back to black content and feeling like we can't be honest about it, my shit actually starts with not being interested to begin with.
Okay.
In the sense of like, why?
You're not interested in like black people.
Fuck you. That is not what I said.
Like you don't like to watch things with like
feeling
black.
Justin, I hate you. Goodbye. Thank you for having me on the show. But feeling like we don't have to watch it all. Like,
yes.
I'm not a part of
it. If it doesn't speak to you,
I'm not
you don't
part
feel like
every
you have
conversation.
To watch it.
Yeah, and like,
so you're not watching Power.
You're not watching Power. You're not watching Power.
Y'all are out here in these streets.
But you know what I mean, though? It's feeling obligated.
I know, you're right. Say it. Say everything you want to say. I don't
care. That sense of feeling an obligation to having to support and watch that because it's black. And you know what I mean? But it's like, but if it's not, like,
if it doesn't feed you.
If it don't feed me, like, should I feel bad about that? I don't want to, like, force myself to watch something that I don't want to watch. So therefore, I remove having to speak on it. Because
not watching it in the first place is speaking on it, though.
Yeah,
I am speaking on it.
Just because I think among black people, there is an expectation that we watch it all. And I'm not saying the expectation is fair, but I'm saying when you choose not to meet that expectation, it is a choice. You know.
Yeah.
I don't disagree with you. There's lots of stuff that is black that I don't watch because it's not for me.
Mm-hmm. And that's okay. Yeah. You know what I mean? But now going to sort of where I learned my school, I'm obsessed with Filmstruck. Shout out to Filmstruck.
They're great.
And for me, it's like Dime said, it's about watching the directors and the filmmakers that I want that inspire me the most, and like really doing, and not just the ones that everyone knows. Like I've been learning so much about the B-sides of like certain directors.
Oh, that's
like,
cool.
It's like, wait, this is just as. Oh wait, Justin, you have a.
No, I just want in. I want in like this like film club you guys have. Like, well, I just because I really do miss that about school.
Yeah,
me too.
I miss just like not having a choice.
Me too. Yeah,
I miss not having a choice in what you're watching. So it's like you don't watch it because like you want to be in it. Like it's really like no, watch this black and white ass movie. You're gonna watch it, and then it always blows my mind.
I know,
and it blows your mind too because you see.
But these aren't things that I would normally choose because I'm like always watching to be entertained or be or relaxed or whatever. Sorry, go ahead.
Right, and well, you see. Influences, or you see, I'm like, wait, oh, so he was doing this, or this was happening, and like, you didn't see that because it's not like shown everywhere, but it's like, there's so much great cinema out there. Yeah,
Filmstruck is the Netflix
version
of
it. It's amazing.
So good. Yeah, it's like all of the great. It's like the Criterion collection.
It's Criterion, but also you know those artsy fartsy films that like nobody talks about. And it's dope because it puts them all in sort of like collections or categories. So like they just did Liza Minnelli collection. So I know.
Justin, I can't.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so
really?
There's a whole Liza Minnelli, like, cabaret, of course.
I just want to spend a minute on cabaret.
Fosse? Because just... of all things we have to spend it on.
It's so, like, no one's done it better than Fosse. I'm sorry. Like, nobody has figured out how to film choreography.
No.
We don't realize it, but we are in an age of movie musical that Bob Fosse created.
Yeah.
The backstage musical, which mm-hmm. traditionally, you know, it started with, like, Judy Garland and mm-hmm. all those folks were like, you know, it's putting on a show. Mm-hmm. And so when you have a musical number, it's because these are people who are making a musical. Or, like, the musical numbers have a reason for being there.
Right.
And that existed, but Bob Fosse took it and made it important, mm-hmm. and he made it cinema.
Mm-hmm.
And he took a musical that was not written like that, cabaret,
right.
and turned it into that.
Yeah.
And it was the first time that you saw something that was like sophisticated high art about the human condition,
yeah.
but it also was a backstage musical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now that's the world. That's when someone talks about a musical and they talk about a backstage musical, they're talking about the world Fosse created.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so I just got a shout out.
And also, yeah. okay, don't shade me.
Okay.
But
shade.
In high school, okay. Mm. 2002.
Okay. Wow.
Chicago came out.
The film.
The film.
The yeah. film.
The film. And we all went mm-hmm. to see the film.
Like, you loved it.
I loved it. And that was the moment.
I was waiting for the shade. Sorry. What is it?
The shade is that I'm obsessed with Chicago and ugh. People kind of hate on it.
No.
That's the shade.
People do hate on it because they won Best Picture yeah. and they're like, it shouldn't have. Yeah. But it's brilliant.
I think part
it's
of it was there was still musical phobia at the time. And I think that, like, I don't know that I continue to hear a lot of hate about it. When I talk about Chicago, people seem to love it. Mm-hmm. But I will say it doesn't even come close to cabaret.
No, I know, but that was that captured me. That was like, oh wait, that's what I'm doing.
Yes.
Right?
It was
which
brilliant.
Allowed me to go to all that jazz, which allowed me
yes.
to go to cabaret.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So
and the conceit in Chicago, so this is okay, my God, we have that so the three of us have to get together and do, like, just a musical episode.
Super
yes.
down.
But
Sweet Charity, throw that in there.
Oh, my God,
People
Sweet
sleep
Charity.
On
They
sleep
on it.
Motherfucking Charity.
The
sleep.
Rich Man's Frug. Stop
I mean,
it.
Hello, Beyonce reference. Like,
color
come
stories,
on,
line
come.
Stories, yeah, shape stories.
And Shirley MacLaine, brilliant.
Okay, let me just calm down
yeah,
for a second.
Just
what, was I
down.
What was I talking
I don't
about?
Know, because you got so...
Or no, a musical night.
Pennies from Heaven,
mm-hmm.
a movie that no one has seen, okay? Like, a
yeah,
lot of people don't even know.
Don't
this
even
is
know.
Steve Martin. Yeah. He was in a musical. It was called Pennies from Heaven. And it was this guy in the Depression era. It was, like, right after the stock market crash. And he was, like, it's a story about a guy during that time, like a salesman. But the movie pauses, and the characters lip sync pop music of the time.
Oh.
In these, like, imagined, sort of, like, stylized movie musical what? Moments. And it's, like, no one talks about it, but that is where that concept came from. The concept that, like, it's all in Roxy's head.
Right.
Started with Pennies from Heaven. But Rob Marshall made it commercial. Like, he made it mm-hmm. Like, Pennies from Heaven is a bit, it's a little hard, because it's intentionally, like, it's a sharp juxtaposition from real life and the musical world. And Rob Marshall mm-hmm. eased that mm-hmm. and made it, like, you know, for general audiences, I think. And maybe that's where some of the animus comes from. But mm-hmm. I think he really figured out a formula there that was, I thought it was, I still think it's great. I mm-hmm. think the movie's great.
Oh, I want to see it.
But Chicago.
Oh, yeah,
like,
no,
I think Chicago's great.
Love Chicago.
I love Chicago. I mean, love. I love it also because it was the moment that I decided that I was going to be a filmmaker.
Wow.
Ooh, what was that film for me?
Yeah, really quickly, what was the movie that made you either want to be a filmmaker or when it clicked for you, what kind of filmmaker? Because those are different. For you, it was Chicago?
What Chicago did for me is, because we went to a performing arts school and our major was theater. So what it did was it showed me how to take that world that I love so much mm-hmm. and how I would put it in this other world.
Yeah.
Right? I'm not sure that... For me, that meant that was the type of filmmaker I was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
But what's interesting is there's something about that that's coming around now in my life. And I'm not quite sure what that is and what that means, but there's something about that that I want to explore.
Mm.
I don't know what the film is that helped me decide what type of filmmaker.
Maybe it's not a
I don't
film.
Know if I have. I don't know if I have.
But Chicago was a turning point for you.
Major.
That was X-Men for me when I decided, I want to be a director. I didn't know what that was. I didn't know what it was called. Mm-hmm. But I knew someone chose when to cut to, like, Storm and a close-up. And I knew someone made those decisions.
Yeah.
And I knew I wanted to be a director then, but
it was Eyes Wide Shut for me that made me realize what kind of filmmaker I wanted to be, because I was probably too young to see the movie, did not understand some of its implications. But what I did get is that it began and it was slow and I was not used to that pace and I was so bored in the first 20 minutes of the film. And by the time Tom Cruise is walking the streets of New York and he's being followed by a faceless man, I was never more tense in all of my life.
Yeah.
And by the end of that film, you know, the final line when, you know, Tom Cruise, well, no, the most brilliant final line ever, when Nicole Kidman is like, well, you know what we should do now? What's that? Fuck. Credits. I was like, who is this?
Yeah.
What is happening?
Audacity.
I want you forever, like, be like this direct, like that was my introduction to Kubrick.
Yeah.
And just a whole different way of making movies and telling stories. Tiff?
Interesting. I'm going to have to say, I think the first film that I saw that there was a space to tell stories about black girls would have been Crooklyn. Crooklyn was the first time I was like, wait, this I'm on the screen.
People slept on Crooklyn,
totally slept on it.
Crooklyn was the shit. Is the shit.
It is. And it was,
first of all, the dog.
Stop.
Queenie, bitch.
Stop.
Crooklyn's great. I can't even be mad at Spike.
You can't, right. And I was like, it was a hesitation to bring that up, but that's honestly the first film.
Come on.
But I would say, like, it's funny now.
Can't
I look back
Black
at like the films that I was obsessed with as a child, and they're all really obscure.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes total sense.
I didn't realize that, but like, I saw John Waters' Hairspray way too young.
No,
and I was
didn't.
Like,
you saw it at just the right age, my dear.
Yeah, I saw
whenever
like,
you saw
Little Shop of Horrors or like Too Long.
I saw Little Shop of Horrors when they.
Like,
they
all aired, these are great.
They aired Little Shop of Horrors on TV, and I remember I had to go to bed, and I closed the door, and I turned it back on, because I was just like, I hadn't seen anything like that.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Even this, and she came to speak to us at AFI, I saw But I'm the Cheerleader, which was just like Jamie Babbitt film.
So good.
I saw like 7th grade, like HBO played it really, and I was like, I shouldn't be watching. But those movies, now that I think about it, why I was obsessed with them was because of the worlds, you know, like I said. And like, there was they were characters in themselves, these places. And I was like, wow, it feels very theatrical.
Mm-hmm.
But it just there's a freedom to just kind of do whatever.
Yeah.
There's a handful of other ones. And then I would say, like, as I matured, my interest in sort of the masculine directors came when, like, you know, I saw Casino or, like, Goodfellas and Pulp Fiction. And I didn't discover Del Palma and Hitchcock until later. And then I was like, oh, this is it. Because
Del
Palma brings that camp from like a Waters, Little Shop of Horrors, but brings that masculinity of like the Goodfellas, and like kind of merges them, and like that's where I'm at that like crossroad.
Okay, so here's what we're gonna do. We have to stop.
Mm-hmm.
But what we're gonna, the three of us specifically are going to get together again in the Don't At Me franchise.
Okay. Yes.
Guys, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
We're looking, everyone's looking for the black female, the mystical black female director. Where can they find you? Where can they see your work, Tiffany Johnson?
Well, my website has my shorts on there, TiffanyJ.Johnson.com.
Tiffany with two Fs.
Two Fs.
Mm-hmm.
J, then Johnson.
Yeah.
I'm on Instagram at Tiffany Janelle J, and that's Janelle with an E. Find me.
And there we can see your
shorts. Yeah, you can see shorts.
Or find out about how and where we can see your shorts.
Correct. Yeah.
Great. Dime?
Same. Dime Davis in all places.
Okay. Dime
Davis. In all places.
Yeah.
DimeDavis.com. Yeah. At Dime Davis, etc.
Yes.
Guys.
That's easy.
You can't be talking about looking for no black female directors and y'all ain't go to these places, because let me tell you, they are the truth. They are amazing. They're next. And we're going to be back and talk about more films.
I can't
if y'all
wait.
Are cool with that.
Super cool with that.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Bye.
Nice.
All right, I want to thank my guests Dime Davis and Tiffany Johnson, our producer Gina Delvac, our production engineers Garrett Lang and JC Swadek. Special thanks to Vishnu Vallabhaneni, and of course the lovely Gary Scott, our head of programming, Chris Bowers, who made this fabulous theme song. You're listening to Don't At Me with Justin Simeon. If you like the show, or if you want to think piece me, please subscribe to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave a review. I'd love to hear from you. We'll be back next week with another episode of Don't At Me from the one and only KCRW.
Hey guys, it's Cheyenne Davis. You may know me from MTV's Teen Mom OG or Think Loud Crew podcast. I'm here with my dad, Papa Floyd, to tell you about our new podcast, Unfiltered Kitchen.
The kitchen is the hub of the household for many of us. the one-stop shop for conversations both big and small. Cheyenne and I have been having open conversations about all aspects of life in our kitchen since well before she was able to see over the counter.
And now we're inviting you into our own kitchen as a part of the family.
Unfiltered Kitchen is a two-way street. I share my advice on cocktails, cooking, parenting, and the lessons I've learned.
And I inform my dad what it's like to raise kids today, how generational barriers affect us, and the joys of being a daughter. Well, your daughter.
Get ready for a whole lot of unfiltered advice. You can take it or leave it, but you're never going to leave this table feeling hungry for more.
Listen to Unfiltered Kitchen wherever you get your podcasts.